Welcome back to Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, fresh off of vacation with a fresh new guest that you guys are going to love. I've got Kevin Coleman from Football Guys here to join me today. Kevin, what's going on? Tell everybody where they can find your work and what you've been working on.
Yeah, man, appreciate you inviting me. The call up to the big show. But you can find me at Football Guys. That's where I do a lot of my content. We're working on the rookie guide. So we released three versions of that. We just did a big version one in January. Version two just came out after the combine. And then we're hard at work at version three. So by the end of this month, I'm done with rookies. I don't want to look at them anymore. I don't want to talk about them anymore. But that's really what we're working on. And you can find my Dynasty work over there, our Dynasty podcast.
That is awesome. We do appreciate it. You can follow him on Twitter also at DuBois_22. Now, I've got to ask, because you got the Michigan jacket on. We were talking beforehand. I know you're actually out in California, but yeah. When I saw the Twitter handle, I just assumed that it was an Emmitt Smith thing.
It is an Emmitt Smith thing. Okay. So that was my grandpa's favorite player. So That was his favorite player. He passed away when I was younger. And so it's kind of like an homage to him when I started Twitter.
I'm glad I asked about that. That's a fantastic answer. So on today's show, we are going to talk about last week's free agent and trade news. We've got to talk about Justin Fields, Deontay Johnson, Mike Williams, and more. We're going to talk about some March rankings conundrums. I have published my tight end and quarterback rankings this week. I've got running back and wide receiver coming a little bit later in the week. And, you know, we get through free agency and you start moving these guys around and suddenly you come to the questions like, Dalton Kincaid or Kyle Pitts? That wasn't a question before Pitts got Kirk Cousins. It is for me now. We'll see if Kevin thinks that's crazy. We're also going to talk to Kevin a little bit about your rookie thoughts. I'm glad it's not before the end of the month, so you can still talk about those guys. But we start every show the same, Kevin. It's three questions for our guest. The first question's the same for everyone. Now, some people ruined it for you. There's now a qualifier, but what is your one non-negotiable rule or setting for a new dynasty league? And you can't say Superflex because too many people already said that.
So I love that you're giving me this platform to spew my anti-trade deadline. You should not be joining a league with a trade deadline in Dynasty. And I know I'm going to hear it from the comments. The NFL has one. We're playing fantasy football, all right? Like, this is a completely different. To me, if you are in a league that if you're going to trade your first and you have to pay for that next year's dues, that's how it should always be. Right. So to me, not having a trade deadline allows just your league not to be stagnant. So as the playoffs are going, you know, your bottom teams, like a guy, like think of like Alexander Mattison or some of these other guys that have popped off like in the playoffs. And you're like, oh, man, this is that veteran running back that someone needs. If you can move him and you can move him to a contender and get some draft capital back or whatever, I think it helps the league out as a whole. I know that there'll be some that say, oh, you're buying a championship. But in reality, I think you're creating health and competitiveness in your league because everybody has the opportunity to go buy those players off your dynasty team. But I am a big no trade deadline guy. I think that it creates more orphans for your league. If you have a trade deadline, I think, you know, allowing to collect asset and roster build throughout the playoffs helps too. So for me, get rid of the trade deadline. I will not join a league that has a trade deadline. I think it just caps people. I think it caps leagues, managers, all of that. And it's not competitive enough. I want a competitive league that has no trade deadline.
I like it. I think what I really like is the wild types of trades that happen. Mm-hmm. If you get to that, okay, I'm in the fantasy championship. Yeah, I'm going to overpay for this guy because I want to go win a title. And then sometimes you don't and it leads to disasters. But I'm going to ask a follow-up on this one because I've got kind of an opinion that has some of the guests have not enjoyed it as much, but I kind of agree with you on the trade deadline. I do want some periods in the off season, not where trades are banned, but where we're not running waivers. How do you feel about that? Like I would like to go a period of time in February, maybe in March, mm-hmm. where we're not running waivers. And I really like it after the draft. Like we have the draft and I usually include free agents in that. And then mm-hmm. I like to have this period where we can maybe build up. I'm usually in pretty deeper leagues. There's not a lot of guys out there. Maybe build up a fun free agency period for mm-hmm. August or July. How do you feel about restricting free agency a little bit in the offseason?
So we're on the same wavelength on this one. So I, you know, in the leagues that I commish, we find that this is actually kind of the way to do it. As soon as the season's over, we cut off waivers until after the draft. And then we allow the rookies that didn't get drafted in the rookie draft, put in the waivers with all the veterans, everything. And then we open waivers up. And it's a lot of fun, like you said. And it increases trades because people go out there and try to get fab money. And they trade these veterans for fab money to try to go out there and get these waiver pieces that are on the deadline. And for me, I'm all about increasing activity in leagues. And I think if you allow waivers just to run all offseason, I don't think it's as much activity. And, you know, a lot of guys just kind of fall off after the season, and then they're back in like June and they're like, hey, what's up, guys? And like, so having that waiver period, like you said, to run, it just creates activity. And that's what you want in your dynasty leagues, as much activity as possible, creates more trades, which is most important. So you and me on the wavelength there. We don't do that. We allow that waiver runs to go. We have waiver period, we call it, after the rookie draft, and it creates more because after the rookie draft, people go away too. But if you have those waiver runs, they won't go away. And I think that's how you keep dynasty leagues fresh and not folding.
Well, I really think it helps to have those events.
Yeah.
Like, and I know I'm in several of John Bosch's leagues, but like we've got a February veteran free agent auction. And then we've got a July one. Like there's these certain days where everybody knows, okay, we're coming back together. And then you're right. Then the weeks after that, or the weeks leading up to that, you do see more trade offers being made. Mm. Question number two. Who is your biggest dynasty riser and faller in the free agent period?
Yeah, so I cheated a little bit, so don't yell at me. I paired two together. So for my riser, I put Drake London in Pitts. And for the reality of getting Kirk Cousins, when you're looking at Cousins' track record at a quarterback, his pass catchers in the past three seasons, they rank number two, tight end and wide receiver, in points per game scoring in fantasy. So when you think of that, and they had Justin Jefferson, but they had KJ Osborne, Hockenson, these guys, and you're like, hey, you're looking at Pitts and London, that's going to increase their value there. I'm all aboard that train there. I think also when you're looking at London, you have to look at what he did this last year. He only had six targets per game. And then that's sad, like for what Drake London's going to be. So we're definitely going to see that. I think not only Cousins, though, I think the underrated move was getting Zach Robinson as offensive coordinator. Under McVay, you have to love what he's going to bring. Everybody wants that tree, right? LaFleur, McDaniel, O'Connell, Taylor, Slowick, Dave Canales, all those guys are like, hey, we got to get a piece of that tree. They got a piece of it with Zach Robinson. So I do think that Cousins, Zach Robinson, all of that mixed together, and just his history of that number two tight end scoring in points per game the last 3 years, you have to bump up London and Pitts. And we're going to talk about Pitts later, but I think you just have to bump them up. I think this is exactly what you wanted if you had them on your roster.
So I've got London at wide receiver 13 now. Are you higher or lower? Does that sound just about right?
Oh, I just finished him yesterday. I am at 12.
Okay, so absolutely right perfect. Did you have a faller also, or just two risers?
Yeah, I know I got a faller. Brian Robinson Jr. is a sleeper, is a faller a little bit because getting Eckler there, not only Eckler, I do not like what they're doing in the coaching staff. Kingsbury to me is overrated. I think he was running a college type offense in Arizona. I'm concerned about what quarterback they're going to go with, which there's a lot of rumors right now. They don't know what they're going to do at two. When you look at Robinson last year, he was a very sneaky running back. Running back 14 overall. And you have to like that, what he did. I think in 12 games, you had the snaps, you saw the touches were there, almost 16 touches a game last year. So, and he really was efficient. Now he has Austin Eckler. Now he has a new offense that doesn't really highlight running backs. Now, Kingsbury said he's going to come out there and fix it. He's going to, you know, he's changed, which I don't know how much he's changed in the last year at USC and all the things that he did. But I think, you know, that sneaky play that Brian Robinson Jr. was, where he was kind of that value heading in the last year and even this year in the offseason, I think it took a hit. Eckler is not amazing, but Eckler still is going to have that PPR upside. So you really have to, you kind of limits his ceiling, what Robinson's going to do. He's got to score touchdowns, and that's a touchdown dependent asset. And you got to be very careful with that in fantasy.
So I'm going to give you a chance now with question number three to look like a genius, because we did this question a lot last year. We absolutely did have people say Puka Nacua. Mm-hmm. I was saying Tank Dell, which should have been just an absolute smash, but because I didn't say Puka Nacua now, it's not quite as awesome. Then listen, I want to be clear. I've said this multiple times already. There's not going to be a Puka Nacua in 2024. Those don't happen. But there is going to be a great rookie sleeper. Who's your favorite rookie sleeper in this class right now?
Yeah, I figured why not just go deep on this one for you all. You know, we do the rookie guy. We have like over 150 players in this. So wide receivers, we had over 60. The guy that I have slowly kind of looked at as being kind of that guy that fits this mold, Ryan Flournoy from Southeast Missouri State. You know, when you're looking at him and you go through the 40-yard dash, 4.44, vertical jump almost 40 inches. So his RAS score is 9.83. So relative athletic score from Kim Platt, if you guys don't know who that is, he kind of looks at just, hey, who's the most athletic? How are they going to, you know, do on the field? He is older. He's an older prospect because he's been, you know, he basically played 6 years in college. So he's got to get out there and play right away. But elite level athleticism, he was on the freaks list as well. You know, good footwork, route running, very versatile too. I think when you looking at him as a wide receiver, if you go watch his tape, his highlight, very versatile, can play inside, out, X, even slot. We comped him to Brandon Ayuk in our guide, just based on what possibly that third to fifth round kind of evaluation that we have for him, where he could go. I think that he tested very well. I love what he can do. He's that guy that if he fits into like, I would love him in like a West Coast scheme. So if he does get drafted by that, that's like the Puka thing. He got drafted in a perfect spot for him that allowed him to excel right in the things that he does well. Ryan Flournoy could be that guy too, depending on where he gets drafted. I'm really loving like maybe the Bills later. Like if he goes in that third or fifth round, if the Bills decide not to take a first round wide receiver, someone like that, like a team that has that established quarterback, Jacksonville as well. I would love Ryan Flournoy to kind of land there.
We do have a question in the chat from Austin, and we're not going to answer it right now, but I'm going to put it up there still. What is your trade value on Addison looking to sell? We're going to talk about Jordan Addison towards the end of the show when we get into those rankings disputes. Right now, we're going to take a short break, and then we will get into the free agent and trade news we haven't talked about yet. Okay, Kevin, so we are back. We did not didn't have a live show last week, so there's some things that we've got to catch up on, and we're going to start with, I guess, what we would call the bad news. Certainly the bad news if you were someone who had Justin Fields on your dynasty roster. Yeah. He is traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a bag of footballs. No, it's a sixth round pick that could turn into a fourth round pick based on playing time. And this is like a mixed bag to be sure, because he's going there to back up Russell Wilson. In theory, there will be some little competition, I guess, but I think Wilson's going to start week one. Wilson's there on a veteran minimum contract, hasn't looked like himself the last two or three seasons, just a 1 year deal. So there is, like, if you were going to go be a backup, there were worse places that you could have gone to be a backup. But still, this is a guy who, anytime he was in the starting lineup for the Chicago Bears, he was in the starting lineup for your fantasy roster. He's young enough. He's got that rushing profile. He was my QB9. He is now my, and that was not just like last week. That was last month before we realized that nobody wanted to trade anything for Justin Fields. He's fallen now to QB18 for me. And I almost wonder if that's too high. I wrote today about the fact that I can't believe I now have Will Levis ranked higher than Justin Fields in Dynasty. It feels super gross. But I don't know for sure that Justin Fields is going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL again. Can you offer me any hope?
Well, I mean, the biggest hope I can offer you is that he's going to get out there next year, right? And so I think the elephant in the room is someone's got to get him a contract after this year. So the question is, like, can he play well enough in Pittsburgh? Let's say Russell Wilson doesn't play well. And I saw Russell Wilson working out with sunglasses on, so I'm assuming he's not going to play well. So if you got Justin Fields, you hope that he gets out there around like week 7 or 8, right? And then he does enough, and he's done enough in that room to where they give him that deal, like a Baker deal, like that front-loaded 2-year deal in terms of like, hey, he's going to be there for 2 years. That's probably best case scenario for Justin Fields. But like you mentioned, you know, when he is out there, he's a must-start in fantasy. I mean, he was QB5 in fantasy points per game in 2022. 23, he was QB12. And I just keep going back to all the people that are starting out there, like Aiden O'Connell, possibly, right? Mm-hmm. Some of these other guys that like are out there, like Justin Fields has to be able to find a role. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he does do a Baker Mayfield like path, but maybe it's not with the Steelers. Maybe then the following year, team misses out on a quarterback, or one of these teams draft a quarterback and doesn't pan out, kind of like what we've been seeing. Like, I feel like Justin Fields is always going to have kind of like upside because someone's going to put him on the field. If he gets out there, yeah, you plug him in. But in Dynasty right now, yeah, he is a hold. Like, you're not moving Justin Fields unless you can get a first or something back for him. the best hope that you have is that he assimilates really well in that system. He does really well with the, you know, the coaching staff. They like him, and that coaching staff decides to bring him back the following year, maybe on a 1 or 2 year prove it deal, and they move on from Russell Wilson. That's the best hope you probably have.
And to that point, we know that Arthur Smith loves backup running backs. Mm-hmm. And he loves backup tight ends.
Yeah.
Maybe he will find a backup quarterback that he loves here more than his starter. And we can see more Justin Fields than Russell Wilson. I agree with you. There's no chance I'm selling Fields right now off this news. I do think it's interesting in a super flex league to think about buying. Mm-hmm. And I think it's definitely a round two pick that you're talking about if you're doing that. What's the earliest pick that you would give for Fields in a super flex?
Yeah, I mean, he's in that purgatory stage of like the owner probably doesn't want to move him and the other guy doesn't want to buy him for that price. But if I had to put a valuation on him, I would not mind if I'm a contender and I need that third quarterback and I'm willing to take it. The 201, the 202, okay. Early second to me is fine if you're going to take a shot on there knowing the risk that's involved.
Now, that wasn't the only trade that the Steelers made. In fact, we've got like three of them here. But Deontay Johnson's now on the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
And he's going to try to go fulfill that that Adam Thielen role, I guess, from last year. Although it's a different offense now, as you mentioned, Dave Canales there. Johnson has been a bit of an enigma in Dynasty because one of the best route runners in the NFL. The dude can get open. Mm-hmm. He has had a very difficult time turning that ability into fantasy production, especially recently. Now, he's played with some awful quarterbacks. We've got questions about the quarterback he's playing with this year, although I think there's at least more upside with Bryce Young than there is with Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph or the ghost of Ben Roethlisberger. Do you view this as an upgrade for Deontay Johnson just because, you know, kind of a fresh start, maybe more target opportunity? I had him at wide receiver 44. I did upgrade him, actually. I've got him in the 30s now, wide receiver 34. Where are you at on Johnson?
Yeah, I have him at 33, and to me, this is a smash upgrade for him because of the offense he's going into. Dave Canales' offense, like when you're diving into it, so I just did a big piece for Football Guys that's coming out this week on Bryce Young. I was kind of looking at like risky quarterbacks, so I did like a deep dive into Canales' offense. The biggest thing that you mentioned about Deontay Johnson, he's an elite route runner. You know what Dave Canales loves? Elite route runners, because he actually doesn't label his wide receivers. So the one thing that I was mentioning when I was diving into like his offense, he doesn't name them slot or outside. They run the whole route tree, and then he just fits them in into his offense how he sees fit. I think that's why they wanted Deontay Johnson, because this kid can run anywhere. He can run from the slot, outside. He can kind of, he's not that traditional X, Y, whatever you want to call him and how you want to label him there. So I do think they have like, they have a plan for them, right? Like I always listen to Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah, and they always talk about coaching staffs having a plan for the players that they acquire. They have a plan for Deontay, and he's going to fit into that mold for Canales' offense. And you know what he's going to get? He's going to get targets, because there's no one else on that roster that I'm like, oh yeah, he's going to earn some targets there. So targets are going to be there plenty. I think he's a fun buy right now, early second, if you can get him in terms of valuation there. And I love what he's been able to do with quarterback play. He made Geno Smith look serviceable. He got Geno Smith that second contract. He got Baker Mayfield that second contract. Right. And you know when Russell Wilson had the best year of his career the last 5 years was when he was the quarterback coach. So when you're thinking of like all the positives going into Dave Canales' offense and what he's been able to do there, that's going to lead to Deontay Johnson. I think he's a fun 2-year buy for me. But I also am a Deontay Johnson truther. So everybody listening out here, just know I love the guy as a player. I've been really, you know, frustrated with him the last couple of years. So definitely comes from a biasy of just thinking that he's very talented, but he's finally in an offense I think is going to placate his strengths.
Well, I've been a Deontay Johnson doubter. And I've got him one spot behind you, and I agree wholeheartedly with buying at an early second round cost. So 100% on board with that, even from a guy who hasn't been as optimistic about Deontay Johnson. A guy I was pretty optimistic about for several years was Mike Williams. He signed with the Jets on a pretty small contract. He was my wide receiver 46. He actually went backwards to wide receiver 54, and part of that is I don't love where he signed and the fact that he's only got a 1-year contract and his injury history. The other part is the Jets are talking like they don't know if he's going to be ready for the start of the season. They're pretty concerned about his injury timeline. I think that's why he was unable to get a multi-year contract. This is not a guy that I'm particularly optimistic about this year, and at 29 years old, maybe for the future. Do you have any more hope than I do?
No, I've never really been a Mike Williams guy. I don't love him with that turf out there at MetLife either. Like I'm concerned about his knees and everything there. He just can't stay healthy. And I think that if the Jets do kind of look at that line, I think that there is a possibility the Jets go after an offensive player in the draft too, maybe not in the first round, but I don't see him having that long-term effort. If there's any way you could pivot off of Mike Williams to any type of other asset. I think you have to do that, right? Like, I saw Mike Williams go straight up for Zamir White. And while I don't think Zamir White is like a valuation of like, yes, he's going to be the guy in Las Vegas, I think I'd rather have the shot in the running back that could have the volume if I needed to, and I can pivot to get a little younger. If there's anywhere I can pivot Mike Williams to get younger out there, even like a late second, I would definitely do that right now to kind of get out of there. Even as a contender, I think that you can get some of that late second that's going to give you more production and more consistent, right? Because Mike Williams' biggest thing is I can't plug him in my lineup because he's just inconsistent.
Yeah, you don't ever know when again, we have this discussion all the time. If you're talking about a wide receiver or three or a flex, those guys like that, I kind of like, I don't, he might score me 4 points 3 weeks in a row, but he might get me 30 next week.
That's fair.
And so, that's fair. But yes, I mostly agree with you that even as someone who's been pretty excited about Mike Williams, I'm having a hard time. Now, you mentioned Zamir White, and I think that's an excellent transition. You're clearly a pro. We've got three running backs here. Rico Dattle staying with the Dallas Cowboys. Alexander Mattison signs with the Raiders to join Zamir White. And then Deontay Foreman signs with the Browns. I've got these guys ranked between running back 60 and 75, with Dowdle the highest. Let's start with him. Do you have any hope that he is anything more than he was last year?
I think that I don't know what Dallas is doing. And as a Dallas fan out there, like, I do think that they're going to definitely target a running back either round two or three. I know I hear a lot of noise about Lloyd and Trey Benson and these guys. So where Dowdle is at, I think he's a very high-end backup, though. Like, I think that he could assume that role. Like, he had some games last year. I think that against the Giants, I think that he had a touchdown, almost like 60 yards, right, something like that. Like, he showed some flashes. I do know the coaching staff likes him. So to me, like, yeah, I mean, as far as value goes in Dynasty, because running backs really – the running back market's completely changed now. It's basically, what can they do for me now? Like, what are they going to do for me now? Even the top guys. Okay, are they going to stay healthy and do those things? I think Dowdle finds himself in a pretty fun running back two role because he's the depth chart running back two. And I think that after the draft, probably, and he has some value, definitely, and you can move off of him, pivot him. That's where I kind of lean with Dowdle on a lot of these running backs. Like, do they have any value moving forward? Can I move off of them? Can I kind of trade him for another asset? Or can I plug him in a pinch in Dynasty? Like, okay, these guys are injured. Will he have that? I think he has upside there.
Okay. A little bit of optimism. And most of the response I saw to the Alexander Mattison signing was, this is fantastic news for Zamir White.
Yeah.
That you mostly agree. Like, even I assume they're going to draft somebody on day three. It sounds to me like Zamir White's going to be the starting running back. And I don't think Madison's going to matter all that much. Would you agree?
Yeah. Madison, to me, I've never been a Madison guy. You know how you have those people that were never really that guy. Yeah. Madison, to me, I was always a pivot off, trade him. I've been on record doing that. I think they like Zamir White. And I think that coaching staff is one of those guys that kind of will ride the hot hand. I mean, he was a workhorse he averaged 23 touches down the stretch. They love this kid. And I think that's really where it lines. Madison's just probably insurance. It wouldn't shock me to see Madison get cut in the preseason. Like, if they draft somebody and they like somebody else.
Speaking of that, it wouldn't shock me all that much to see Foreman get cut in the preseason. Yeah. But I do wonder, because I'm very skeptical that Nick Chubb's going to be ready for week one. I'm not sure. I wouldn't be that surprised if he starts the season on the pup with the significance of that knee injury, his stage of his career.
Yeah.
Do you think Foreman matters all in relation to Jerome Ford as a potential early season starter?
I think it's more about what they're trying to do in that offense, right? Getting Jerry Jeudy. I think they're going to be more pass happy in terms of like that offense. I know Stefanski usually isn't, but they're trying to placate Watson for whatever that is. Like, I think they're trying to figure out a way to kind of assimilate him into it with Flacco, kind of do what we did last year. So I don't know how many opportunities are going to be there. I'm always a volume guy when it comes to running backs. I'm very old school like that. Like, I used to draft, you know, those standard leagues out there. Volume, volume, volume. Jerome, to me, is definitely that volume there. I actually like Nyheim Hines a little bit in terms of if he's going to stay there as a pass catcher, those type of things, Pierre Strong, those type of guys. Foreman does not move the needle for me probably whatsoever. I mean, he might have a little bit upside at the beginning. He kind of reminds me of, like, when you're looking at, I mean, what he was last year with Chicago, right? Like, oh, he could maybe pop out there early in the season, and he never did. And I think that's kind of the same role he has.
I would agree. One more piece of news from last week. One more Steelers trade. Kenny Pickett headed to the Philadelphia Eagles. Do we even have to hold on to him in a super flex league?
No. Cut. Kenny's cut. Done.
Make room for him. Your rookie draft, you need to make a fourth round pick. You can cut Kenny Pickett and make that pick. Let's take one more short break. All right, Kevin. I've got four rankings conundrums that who should be tight end four. I've got Kyle Pitts versus Dalton Kincaid. I had Kincaid ahead before the Kirk Cousins news. I currently have Pitts ahead, but I don't feel confident in either direction. Sell me on one or the other, Kevin.
They're really in the same tier. I think it comes down for me, like, you know, Pitts is younger than Kincaid, which is still a crazy stat for me. Like, I was looking at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, Kyle Pitts is still younger than Dalton Kincaid. I think that's where we've been kind of conditioned because we've heard Pitts being tied in one for so long and he hasn't lived up to that expectation. I think it comes down to, like I mentioned earlier, I love the splits in terms of what Cousins is able to do in that offense. Obviously Kincaid plays with a very good quarterback in Josh Allen. But when you look at the numbers when he played with Dawson, when Dawson Knox was out there, when he wasn't injured, you know, he only averaged 4 targets and 3 catches and 35 yards per game. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that's what it's going to be, but I do think they like Knox. And I think if they're going to share snaps and targets, that limits, Kincaid's ceiling a little bit. And I do think the Bills go out and grab an offensive player. They got to get a wide receiver. I think that Brian Thomas Jr. is in play. I think in the second round, if Troy Franklin is there, some of those guys. So for me, I lean Pitts. Now, is he going to burn me again? Probably. Like, that's just Kyle Pitts. That's his role in Dynasty, to burn all of us. But I do lean Pitts because I think he's going to be the second target getter on that team. I think he's talented. I think they're going to utilize him well in Zach Robinson's offense. So it's close, though. 4-5 for me. I mean, it's a pick 'em. But I lean Pitts just based on upside and ceiling. And Knox being there does hurt Kincaid.
Two wide receivers that I am higher on than consensus for sure. Both top 20 dynasty wide receivers for me, Rashi Rice and Jordan Addison. I have these guys back to back now. Definitely had Addison higher when I expected that Kirk Cousins would be returning to Minnesota. Now Sam Darnold's his quarterback, and I don't know if that's going to be the case week one, but I don't love it. And honestly, like the Hollywood Brown signing, I felt like was pretty close to a best case scenario for Rice. It's a very complimentary piece that's not going to steal any of those underneath targets that Rice is making his money on. Who would you rather have, Addison or Rice?
Yeah, very close. And when it comes down to these tiers of like my rankings, because I hate doing rankings anyway, but when I was looking at my rankings and going through them, they're two spots away from each other. What is their quarterback? Well, one has Patrick Mahomes, and it's pretty simple when you're looking at that. And to your point about Marquise Brown, very complimentary. Rashee Rice is a very, you know, mesh guy over in the middle, can kind of win at different routes, those type of things, where Brown is more that, hey, he's going to be that MVS, a better version of MVS, kind of stretching the field and kind of having that role there. The big thing that stands out to me is Rice had over 100 catches last year and 1,200 yards with only 19% target share. I think it's going to go up. And I think the elephant in the room too, with this receiving room, is I think Kelsey's going to take a step back a little bit. I think they're going to, I don't think it's maybe like a play or like him getting older. I just think that they're going to look at this and say, hey, you know, we need to get Rice and Brown and these guys more involved early in the season. We're going to save Kelsey for later in the season in the playoffs. And you know, the Chiefs offense probably better than I do as a fan and everything.
Right.
But I'm big on Rice. I think that, you know, for me, when you're looking at just his situation is much better. I think he performed. I mean, if it wasn't for Puka, we'd be talking about Rashee Rice having a heck of a wide receiver year as a rookie coming out. So for me, I'm Rice on this just based on that quarterback play. And I think that he's going to be kind of their wide receiver one. And who doesn't want the wide receiver one for Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, I have him one spot ahead. So I've got Rice ahead of Addison. I think I'm higher than consensus on both these guys. They're 15 and 16 or 16 and 17 for me right now. I haven't added the rookies yet, so that'll drop a little bit in the next month. But I do think that with Rice, I'm always a full season statistics are more predictive than second half statistics kind of guy, except maybe with rookie wide receivers. And if you look at what Rice did once he became a full-time player last year, you wouldn't be that far off projecting him to be a wide receiver one this year. And so the guy's second year in the league with Patrick Mahomes, who could be that, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes up from where I have him ranked once the season gets started. We got a couple of running backs on the same. How often are two running backs on the same team back to back in my dynasty rankings? Not very often. Did not love Tony Pollard signing with the Tennessee Titans. Tyjae Spears there with him. I have these guys back to back now. Spears was about 5 spots ahead of Pollard before the signing. They're so far apart. I think 4 years apart in age. Completely different profiles. But if I'm projecting one of them to be a workhorse and a potential league winner this year, it's Pollard. So which of those guys would you value higher in Dynasty?
So this really comes down to an age question. Probably we're talking about valuing higher, because I would value Spears higher because he has more upside. And like, there's ageism is real in Dynasty. So when people look at Pollard, as soon as you draft Pollard, have Pollard in a roster, it's like buying that new car. It's used at the lot. And Tony Pollard is used for evaluation there. So Spears to me can be that guy where like, I didn't love Spears at his ADP, like 7 or 8, like, you know, pre-Pollard. And now he's like 10, 11. And I'm like, yeah, I can buy there. Like, I think that that's a good value. It's funny how that works. It's like 2 or 3 rounds. You're like, yeah, I'll buy that now. And you have to like it because, you know, when you're looking at this Fantasy Points data, they do a really good job of it. He ranked 5th in explosive run weight last year, 14th in yards after contact. He looks really, really good. And he can be kind of a 3-down guy too. 7th in target share last year. And I do love their offense now. When you're thinking of what they're bringing over, Cincinnati's offensive coordinator coming over to Tennessee there, I think they're going to get him more involved. And you look at how Mixon kind of was involved in that, and they used Chase Brown in that way as well last year. So to me, I think Spears is the better value. If you want to lean on Pollard this year, I think there might be a possibility there. It's just he did not look the same after that injury. There was something that just he didn't look explosive. So Spears to me is the better play just from a value perspective.
Yeah, it's I have Spears one spot ahead of Pollard. I think this is the thing I love about tiers is you can get guys like this, because I do think like I get a little bit worried about the young guy who was on the team and the coaching staff goes and pays the new guy. So this coaching staff chose Tony Pollard, did not choose Tyjae Spears. That doesn't always mean everything. It certainly didn't mean anything with Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard last year. Mm-hmm. But what I was going to say about tiers is I think these are great trade partners if you've got a contender and a rebuilder, because a rebuilder should have no use for Tony Pollard. And I personally think Pollard's going to be quite a bit better for a team trying to win it all this year than Spears is. One more at the quarterback position, and maybe this guy should be the biggest loser of the free agency and coaching change season. Justin Herbert, great coach for the Chargers. I'm not sure great coach for Justin Herbert's fantasy value in terms of how many times he's going to get to throw the ball. Oh, yeah, and he lost Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, and Josh Palmer's currently his number one wide receiver. Now, they'll probably draft somebody early, or they'll draft an offensive lineman so they can run block. Justin Herbert versus Kyler Murray. I have these two back-to-back in my rankings right now. Weren't even close a year ago, but here we are.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. You're like in my mind, because I've been wrote like a quarterback piece on like, you know, riskiest assets, and I had Herbert on there, and I just turned it in. And, you know, I can't be a fraud here. So what I put in there, when you're looking at Justin Herbert last year, career low completion percentage, yards, touchdowns, he was very inconsistent. He did have 6 top 10 weeks, though, but you couldn't really start him there. With Harbaugh, just for everybody out there, and Greg Roman, when you're thinking of their time in San Francisco, this is how they finish in passing attempts each year. 31st, 31st, 32nd, 29th. And Denny Carter put that out recently. And he's talking about that. Then at Michigan, I mean, their passing rate was 117th out of 130th. Now, do I think it will be that crazy and inefficient in terms of passing? No, I think that Harbaugh is smart as a Michigan fan. He knows why he went there for Herbert, but I think it's going to just heavily rely on touchdowns. I think that the offense can be efficient and they can be good, but then you're looking at Herbert just throwing more touchdowns there from a fantasy perspective. Now, I have Herbert ranked higher, but if I could get, and what I wrote about is if I could get Kyler Murray plus, I'd probably do that. Like if I can move tier down a little bit, where it's not a big tier, it's like QB7 to QB10, but I could get some type of added assets to that, I would probably do that and grab Kyler Murray. I'm pretty high there. If they go out there and get Marvin Harrison Jr. even higher, right? And I think that discount goes away if they do that. So I think there's still some unknown with the Cardinals and what they're going to do in the draft. I mean, I saw a mock where they drafted 2 wide receivers in the first 2 rounds. If they do that for Kyler Murray with McBride and an underrated offense out there, I think we could be talking about Kyler Murray again being a top 5 guy. And in Herbert out here just handing the ball off 20 times, 25, 30 times a game. And I think if you can pivot down a little bit and get plus, I think that's the move in Dynasty right now.
Yeah, I mean, there might be a situation where Justin Herbert has his worst statistical season and his first playoff season. I would guess he would trade and every one of his Dynasty managers would not. So we see have a comment in the chat here that Arizona might trade back. Listen, maybe. If Arizona trades back and the Chargers get Marvin Harrison, this is a completely different discussion. Mm-hmm. But I do currently have Herbert one spot ahead. You said 7 and 10. I said 8. I have them at 8 and 9. I'm going to see if I can guess the two guys that you have in between them. Let's see if I can get my crystal ball out. And I'm going to guess the two guys that you have between those guys are Anthony Richardson and Trevor Lawrence.
Lamar. I have Lamar right there. I'm actually a little lower on Lamar.
We definitely should have had to talk about Lamar. Go ahead. And who is the other one?
Lamar and then Anthony Richardson. Yeah.
Okay. So Lawrence, you have ahead of these guys.
Lawrence behind those guys.
Okay. Actually.
Yeah.
Okay. That is good stuff. So I, like you said, you are in the thick of the like we all are right now, yes. Like trying to figure out these rookies, and then they're going to have the draft. The NFL is going to tell us what they think of them, and we're all going to have to scramble to change all of our opinions.
Yeah.
But let's talk about these top four quarterbacks right now. How are you ranking the top four quarterbacks, and how will landing spot change that?
Yeah. So, you know, I want to reiterate something that I do that I started doing a few years ago is whatever team that I think is going to draft a quarterback, I rank their everything, weapons, staff, offensive line, defense. And that's how I rank them. And then once they get drafted, like you said, and once we figure out that they're way smarter than we are when we're trying to predict these things, then I usually take that into account based on landing spot. Now, as far as my top four, I have Caleb and Drake in the top two. And this is fantasy too, just so everybody knows, like in terms of fantasy rankings. And then I do have Jaden and JJ kind of the same at three, depending on landing spot to me. I do think Jaden is unique because he has upside from a rushing standpoint. JJ does too. I think that he's a little underrated there in terms of what he can do. But that's really how like the four kind of like rank for me. I think Drake May's been going through the ringer a little bit out there at social media and stuff. And I go back to it. He's an elite passer, man, and he can really play in any system. The thing with Drake and Caleb, I think that separates themselves from Jaden and JJ from me. And we just did a deep dive on the football guys stuff too, is, man, they can play in any system. I think that they're not system dependent. I think Caleb and Drake can play in a West Coast scheme if they needed to. They can play in Waldron's offense if they needed to. They can play in Kingsbury because they played 90% of their snaps in shotgun. Like when you're looking at what they can do, where Jaden and JJ, whoever drafts those guys, you better have a plan. And they really need that system. I think Jaden would do well in a vertical passing offense, kind of what he played with LSU. Like if he goes to somewhere else where it's not vertical scheme, it's not air raid type area, I'm a little concerned. And in JJ, they got to build an entire roster around him. Like it's going to be something where, hey, this is how he's going to do it. Kind of at Michigan, the same thing. That's kind of how I rank those four. As far as landing spot, I think Bears and Vikings to me are the best spot for a quarterback. And the Bears kind of come in with probably the best situation a rookie quarterback has seen. I know we've seen the narrative and people roll their eyes, but when you think about the weapons they have, you know, I rate them a 7 on my scale. Staff, Shane Waldron, again, made Geno Smith look serviceable, which to me is something, you know, really beholden. I think he knows how to protect his quarterbacks. Offensive line is incomplete for me right now, but defense, I think we underrate how rookie quarterbacks need that good defense to keep them off the field, to be in positive game scripts, those type of things. I love that spot. Them and the Vikings. The worst spot to me is New England. I'm out.
I'm glad you led me into that. That's my next question. Like you've got Drake May as QB2 and as a kind of a clear QB2. Let's just say we get to draft day. Caleb goes number one, as we expect. Anybody, Daniels or McCarthy goes number two, and Drake May falls to three to the Patriots. Is he still the second quarterback in your dynasty rookie rankings?
I've already said it. I'm avoiding any quarterback that goes to New England. Okay. So if he was to go there,
right,
good for him. I hope you overcome the adversity that you got there. But that's one of those ones where it's like, you take the risk. I don't want the risk. I didn't draft any Kenny Pickett for that same reason, because I didn't like him as a player, but also like I was concerned about the spot. Then you look at New England, like I labeled him one for weapons. I don't see, like, you know, offensive line really
Come
bad.
On, I love DeMario Douglas.
Okay. I like DeMario Douglas too. I do. I like DeMario, but like staff one, Alex Van Pelt was not good with the Browns. Right. That is not a staff that I want developing quarterback there. And so to me, if anybody goes to New England, I'm just going to avoid them. I just think that it's kind of like, it's too risky for me where I can take some upside with Jaden and JJ, or go get Malik Nabers in that same spot in the rookie draft.
Yeah. I mean, I could not, like, I don't want to draft the quarterback who goes to New England. Now we talk about landing spot for quarterback. I don't think that probably matters as much as landing spot for running back, especially with this class. There seems to be a pretty clear top five or six running backs that people are ready to get excited about when they find out who gets drafted in round two. I guess I'll ask you to try to avoid that cop-out. Are there any running backs in this class that you love before we know their landing spot?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind throwing some out there. You know, in terms of, I did the running backs for the guide, and, you know, I got a little, some people got mad at my running back one, but mine was Jalen Wright. Pre-NFL Combine, I was a big fan of Jalen Wright from Tennessee, and I'm sticking to that. You know, he had a 9.81 relative athletic score, ran a 4.38, has that explosiveness. I think he is, like, he can be in multiple schemes. I love his one cut ability. And when you're looking at, you know, skill base, what he has big playability and upside. And I think if you're looking at running backs, you know, pre landing spot, that's what you want to see. Can he get on the field early? And he can. I think that he doesn't have a ton of like red flags to me in his profile. If he gets the draft capital, I'm all aboard Jalen Wright. Like, I think, and again, I also want to mention to the people watching, I've shifted my viewpoint on draft capital with running backs. If they're fourth or fifth round, I'm still in, because the way that running backs are getting valued in NFL, they can still have a role, right? Like Kyren Williams, these other guys. And to me, it's all about scheme fit. So if Jalen goes in like the fifth round to a team that can utilize him very well, let's say he goes to the Panthers or something like that, and in another Trey Benson goes to a really crowded running back room, I'm okay drafting Jalen Wright where he's at, even if he doesn't get the good capital as some other people.
Okay. I think that does put you on a bit of an island, because for the most part, when we've I've talked to people about running backs on this show, it's, yeah, I'll talk about the guy that I like, and maybe it's Blake Corum, you know, maybe no matter who it is, but let's see who gets drafted in round two. Let's see who gets drafted by the Cowboys or who gets drafted by the Chargers, and then I'll go with that guy. Let's talk about the wide receivers. That's much more fun. There's a lot more fun wide receivers to talk about. Do you agree that it's Harrison, Neighbors, Odunze as the top three wide receivers? And would you put Neighbors closer to Odunze or to Harrison?
You know, I agree those are the three. So, you know, if you're looking at like your tiers, yeah, absolutely. Right. To me, Neighbors is closer to Harrison than he is Odunze. Okay. I think, you know, when you're looking at his explosive top end speed, I know he didn't test at the combine, but he has that. I think really what separates, you know, Neighbors from Odunze a little bit is I think that he's creative after the catch and he transitions very well in yards after catchability. Like Odunze does that. I think, you know, he has that yards after catchability, but Neighbors is explosive. And I think he steps in right away being a wide receiver one, where I think it takes Odunze a little bit more time. I love the system that he was in there, but Neighbors is very close to Marvin Harrison for me. I think landing spot, man, if he goes to a spot where you're really excited about, like if he's a wide receiver one for the Chargers, all of a sudden now like our outlook changes completely, right? We're like, oh, okay, Neighbors can be that guy. But he's very close to Marvin Harrison Jr.
So that most people agree on that top three. Mm-hmm. Very few people seem to agree on who wide receiver four is, and that might be determined by landing spot or draft capital also, but who's your wide receiver four right now?
So I might get egg in my face on this one, but I've been a longstanding, I play, you know, college fantasy football. Right. Xavier Worthy to me is my wide receiver four. It's kind of like, I guess, a flag plant, even though I hate that term. But fast, right? 4.21. The funniest thing, Heath, to me was when the combine happened. Remember when he weighed in at like 165 and everybody's like, oh, he better run fast. And then he runs fast and everybody's like, oh, that's too fast. I'm like, but wait a minute. No.
Yeah, he ran too fast.
That's John Ross. I'm like, wait a minute. You can't do both. Like, you can't, like, what are you moving the goalpost for? So, like, to me, I think that, you know, he has creativity in catch situations, a natural deep threat, right? Like, he's someone that can definitely stretch the field. He fits NFL systems now. He's versatile. He can do anything. And here's the thing about Xavier, most people are just going to put him in a slot because he's 5'11", 165. No, he can play outside. He has the ability to play outside. He played with a quarterback that wasn't very good in college in Quinn Ewers. He couldn't get him the ball at times, but I think he's actually versatile in scheme. Like, I don't think he's just a slot guy. He can be, but I think he can play on the outside, which increases his kind of value to me at that wide receiver four mark.
Yeah, I think I have no problem with it at four. I had Franklin at four before the combine, and I'm trying to hold on to that, but it's getting more difficult. There's probably five guys who could be wide receiver four. My joke was that whoever the Chiefs took at 32 was going to be wide receiver four, but maybe that's not happening now that they got Marquise Brown. Maybe it is. Then we won't feel quite as good about Rushee Rice. Let's talk about the tight ends, though. I've got a bad relationship with tight ends in rookie drafts. It worked out really well with Sam Laporta last year, but for the most part, I don't love first round tight ends in either the NFL draft or my rookie drafts. Kyle Pitts, maybe that's just some aftertaste effect from him. But how do you feel about Brock Bowers as a round one pick in the NFL draft and then rookie drafts?
Yeah, I mean, as far as NFL, I think that, you know, with the emergence of Laporta and these guys, I think Brock will have a role. I think that, you know, I think that he's going to slip a little bit than teams just based on what teams need at the top. and with the tackles kind of getting pushed down and that offensive line there. But yeah, I think if he went to the Colts, you know, if he went to one of these teams, you're like, wow, hey, he can be that guy. But like anything, like you said about tight ends, give me the guy who's the tight end or wide receiver two. So Brock Bowers can be the wide receiver two. He's going to be that target guy. He's going to earn the second most targets. I'm all in on Brock Bowers in that mindset of where he gets drafted. As far as rookie drafts, where I'm comfortable with him right now, I still think it's 106, 107. I won't take Bowers before that. I think that the value is too much for those other guys in that tier base. So I had the four quarterbacks or three quarterbacks, the two wide receivers. Odunze is kind of that flip for me. Like, who would you rather have based on your build and your roster build? So that's kind of where his value is for me as a tight end, as a prospect. And I think, you know, someone was talking about it much smarter than I was, but they were talking about how like the emergence of all these young tight ends, like Laporta, McBride, Kincaid, all these guys, like maybe they make like the Bowers value shift down a little bit because you don't need him. Maybe you have McBride and these other guys in your roster. And so that's maybe where the value, we're seeing the value flip a little bit, which is good because if you can get Brock Bowers at 107, I think you're excited about that as opposed to having to go at like 104, 103, which he was before the season.
Right. Yeah. I think assuming that we get four quarterbacks in the first 10 picks, I'm probably 108. Top three wide receivers and the four quarterbacks. But again, I'm generally a little bit more skeptical of those tight ends. And I do think it's important to remind people like Sam Laporta was not a first round rookie pick last year.
No.
Like, so it'd be okay. Do you think any other tight end in this class matters in the next year?
Tight ends matter. Come on, Heath. Yeah, I mean, I like Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. I think he's interesting because, you know, when you watch him, I'm a big college guy, so I love watching him. You know, he's versatile, great athlete. And when you're looking at athletes, that's what you're looking at, that tight end position. The question for me with Ben is, will he be a tight end or is he going to be like an H-back, fullback type version? And if that's the case, then I'm kind of out. I think the most intriguing guy to me is Theo Johnson from Penn State. He, you know, measured relative athletic score almost a 10, perfect 10. Great athlete. People don't know this about him, but he played high school ball in Canada. And, you know, they struggled developing him a little bit. When you watch it, I watched Max, don't judge me, but I watched Max Prep's tape of him in high school. And like when you're watching those grainy films from Canada, you're like, oh, okay. It's like he was a man amongst boys out there. And in Penn State, they developed tight ends, but they didn't really have that production. That offense really struggled there. I think Theo could be the guy. Like you're looking in that second to third round of your rookie drafts. You're like, oh man, he landed in the Bengals in the third round. Oh, I love this spot for him. I'm all aboard the Theo Johnson train. So I think Theo is the other guy that you really should have on your radar.
That is Kevin Coleman. Kevin, thank you so much for being here. Everybody go follow him on Twitter at DuBois_22. Kevin, tell everybody where they can find your work one more time.
Yeah, you can find my written work and our Dynasty show over at footballguys.com. And then we also do some college football and some Dynasty stuff at the Debbie Royale.
Absolutely fantastic stuff. Really appreciate you being here. Appreciate everybody who was in the chat participating, everybody listening to the podcast. We will be back on Friday with a live Superflex startup mock draft. Make sure you join us at 11 a.m. Eastern.